Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. This is Bonnie Kay, and welcome to the Straight Wives Talk Show. This is a hard-hitting show that discusses the complexity of marriages between straight women to gay men. Each week, my guests and I discuss issues that affect over 4 million women in this country and millions more around the world who find themselves unknowingly married to a gay or bisexual man. If you have any questions or comments you would like to make during this broadcast, you can either call them in at area code 646-716-4893. And if you're feeling a little radio shy, of course, you can write to me and talk to our guest or write to our guest at bonkay@aol.com. That's bonkaye@aol.com. So this really is a bright and sunshiny day here on the East Coast. It's one of the most beautiful days that we've had so far this year. And the cold is leaving us, and the warmth is going to be setting in, and soon it'll be the heat, and we can all be complaining all over again. But before I introduce my co-hostess for tonight, Suzette, who's going to really heat up the show, I'd like to just make a couple of announcements. And the first one is that I'm really excited that things are forming together for our next healing weekend, which will be the first weekend in October 3rd and 4th. And it will be here in Philadelphia. It'll be very convenient if you're flying in. It's 5 minutes from the airport. The rooms are beautiful, and we got a group rate, so it's going to be really a great investment of your time and little money to really have a life-changing event. I know that on our healing weekends, people who come there walk away totally different than the way they came in. We have a lot of laughs. We have a lot of cries. We have a lot of learning, and we learn from each other and from other professionals who will be joining us. It's my gift to you, so there's no fee for attending the event. Just, you know, like I say, the meals and the cost of your flying or driving in or the hotel. So So I already have a number of women who are, you know, coming, and dynamite women just like you, for the women who are listening. So if you'd like to join me for that weekend, please drop me a note at bonkaye@aol.com, and please make sure that you put in the subject box Healing Weekend. So I'll make sure to put you right on that list to send you information about it. And once again, it'll be October 3rd and October 4th in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. In the upcoming weeks, I have a few really interesting shows that are going to be coming up also. One is a show about codependent personalities. And the other show is from a therapist or a woman who works out of Australia who will be here. And she has a method of healing from damage when you're in a damaged relationship. So I'm really excited about the people who are going to be here in the next week or two. So make sure you catch those shows as well. Don't forget, with our radio show, you can always listen after the fact. After the show is over, you can always go back to the link and listen again. Or for the first time, either way is fine. So now, without further ado, I'm going to be inviting my co-host for tonight, my dear friend, who I missed last month, Suzette Vernon. Hi, Suzette. Welcome back.
Hi, Bonnie. It's great to be back.
This is the second month I'll say welcome back, back. It seems like it was a very long 2 months without having you here on the show. But,
you
know, unfortunately, due to our change in timing, yeah, we had to change the show from Sunday to Monday, and that changed the dates. And so I'm sure you could use a little break, too, but we're really happy to have you back because my guests always, listeners always feel you're so inspiring to them. So with a new marriage in hand and a new life in hand, how's everything going for you?
Things are going very, very well. People say that the first year is the toughest one. And I'm finding out that there's still more healing to be done, but I'm grateful that I'm with a partner that I feel we are able to heal the wounds of each other and continue to grow forward. So I'm enjoying it. It's a challenge, but it's a good challenge, if that makes sense.
It's a good, healthy challenge. I love when people hear you say that, because so many of the women who come to me, especially in the early stages of discovery, really feel this is the end. You know, they didn't have any kind of marriage that they could look forward to spending for the rest of their lives the way they had planned it out. They feel betrayed. They feel that this is it. Nobody's going to want them again. But you went through a lot of those similar feelings, right?
I did. I really, really did, especially, you know, right after my ex and I broke up. You know, at first I felt relieved because it's like there was the drama and the crazy was gone. So there was this point of just quiet, and it felt so good to just have quiet and peace. But then after that, you start dealing with all those things that got absorbed into you, trying to figure out, can I do this on my own? You know, looking around and seeing all the things that you tolerated, and even the areas that you were still intertwined with that person and hating that you're still having to deal with them about certain things. So it takes a while, and so, you know, at first you're trying to rebuild your life, and then after you kind of get that under the belt, that's when I think, for me, I started really dealing with the self-esteem issues. I started dealing with those things, you know, the insecurities, and started dealing with that, even though I was out of the closet physically because we were no longer together, I was still emotionally, in a lot of ways, still in the closet. So I had to set myself free step by step, awakening upon awakening, until every fiber of being in the closet, or even I say all the residue of being in the closet, was cleared, if that makes sense.
It does. And one of the things I'd like to mention also tonight, because we have a lot of new listeners every month and people who haven't heard us in the past, but I think this is an important issue that maybe you could address a little bit. It's very normal. I always say the more a husband comes out of the closet, very often a woman will go further and deeper into that closet. And the reason being is because now the husband's out and he's ready to live his life as an authentic gay man, and everybody's in his corner and cheering him on, and he has a big support team. And one of the things that, you know, I bite my tongue when people say, oh, how much courage you have, you know, that you've come to terms with yourself now 20, 30, 40 years later, and that now you can live your authentic life, and they're all applauding him, but the poor wife who's sitting there whose life is now shambled, in shambles, and, you know, shattered, you know, there's nobody saying, oh, well, let's cheer her on. I mean, nobody's cheering for the, you know, straight wife. Instead, they're putting in comments like, you didn't know he was gay? What, were you blind? You know, did you know he was gay when you married him? Oh, he wasn't gay? Well, then how did he become gay? I mean, he married you. He had children with you. He obviously could have sex. You know, were you that bad of a wife that you turned him away? And, I mean, all these misconceptions, they come forward to us, and we're kind of feeling like we can't even come out and be who we are. We're going to go back into the closet because we're afraid of the shame that people will give to us. Have you seen that with some of the women you've worked with?
Oh, yeah. It's like insult to injury. It's like being violated, because even after you get through being glad, it's almost like there's this part of you, if you really believe that people should be free to be who they really are, there's a part of you that, you know, says to yourself, you know, okay, it was courageous, it was all that. But then there's that part of you that says, but you betrayed me. But you, one of the things I used to always say with my ex was, it didn't bother me that you were gay. What bothered me is that you married me. You know, it's like, you being gay, that I don't have to get over that as much as I have to get over the fact that you betrayed me because you made a promise to me that you couldn't keep.
I think this is what hurts women so much, is that they violated that promise, they violated the trust. And quite frankly, I really do believe that most of us were very pro-gay before they married us. I mean, all the years that I've worked with tens of thousands of women, the overwhelming majority of them were very open and liberal. And I think that's why these guys honed in on us. That's one of the reasons, you know, when they're looking for a prototype of woman to go after, those of us who have always been pro-gay and open to this are easy finds for them, and they always feel that in case things don't quite work out, at least we'll understand it. Because we are open and we are liberal, and we won't, you know, we'll be kind to them. So I think, you know, the women in the most parts, you know, are very pro-gay going into these marriages, just not pro-gay husband.
Right.
And as you were saying about, and you were saying it didn't, you know, that was the least that would have bothered you, the more thing that bothered you, that he would have married you and lied to you all those years. I always say that, you know, gay husbands come in all different varieties. You know, some of them are nicer, others are controlling, some are sociopaths, most of them are narcissists. But, you know, they have some common boundaries there. I mean, there are some good men who really honestly made a mistake, but they try to do the right thing. And those are the guys that I love. You know, they work with their families. They say, look, you know, I want to help you. I'll financially support you. I'll emotionally support you. I'll help you with the kids, whatever it takes. I made a serious mistake. I'm sorry. I didn't know at the time that I was making it. I loved you that much that I thought that any feelings I would have had would have disappeared, but they don't. And I can respect that. But, you know, some of these guys are just, they make you the enemy, because they're tired of looking at you, because you're a reminder of how you're keeping them in prison there. And even though they created the prison for themselves, you know, they turn on you. And as far as being gay, I used to say with my family that being gay was the best part of my ex-husband. It wasn't the negative. It was all the other stuff, being a narcissist, a sociopath, borderline personality, rageaholic, all of that. You know, that was really, you know, who he was first. And the gay was just like the icing on the cake. But he could have been straight. It would have been the same thing. So a lot of them, I think, have really bad personality disorders also. And I think that might come from living a lie every day. Do you think that's possible?
It could be. I think there are a lot of character flaws You know, even though there are some people, like you say, that will not, because of their value system, will not lie to you. You know, because I think whether a person decides they want to lie or not has a lot to do with their value system. I really do. And put, and them being gay or not gay is beside the point. Because if a person really, if a person really believes that they should be true to who they are, or they respect women, I think respecting women is the thing. Because if you respect women, you, whether you're gay or not, you're going to treat them with respect.
Excuse me.
But if you have not been raised with a healthy respect for women, whether you're homosexual or heterosexual, you're still not going to treat women right. So if you believe it's okay to lie to a woman, if you believe that, you know, there's certain inalienable rights that you have as a man that gives you the right to treat her with in an undignified and disrespectful way, then whether you're gay or not, that's the way you're going to behave toward women. You know, and I think it only adds insult to injury that not only do you have bad character, but you're gay on top of it. Meaning
exactly.
That now,
but I'm not sure which came first, the chicken or the egg.
Yeah.
You know, I think that when you live a lie your whole life and every day you're telling a lie and looking over your shoulder, it's like, you know, I remember during World War II, I don't remember it, but I remember learning about it. It was over like 10 years before, you know. It was only 6 years before I was born. But, you know, so I grew up in the midst of all the trials and the Nazi war criminal trials and learning so much about Adolf Hitler, who said, if you start repeating a lie enough, people will start to believe it. And I really believe that's true. If you keep lying and you can convince, you know, one person and the second person, it's just a matter of time till a crowd can believe it. And I think these men lie on a constant basis because they're lying about who they are. And I think it becomes natural to them to just lie. And they are able to compartmentalize everything so that it doesn't matter whether they're telling the truth or not. You know, they keep their true part of their life separate from the lie part of their life. I think that's what changes a lot of their personalities. You know, it's just living that dishonest life every single day.
Yeah. And I realize that you can be in denial. I mean, when we look at our own lives, part of the reasons that we stayed in the relationship as long as we did was because of denial. And a lot of times you don't know what you know until you know it. So if I were to be objective about it, I can believe that a man might be in denial about his proclivities in the beginning, depending on, for instance, if he grew up in a religious situation that was as rigid as mine, then maybe there would be some denial there. But I do believe that once the denial lifts, if you're a person of character, you are not able to continue to live a lie. Once that denial lifts and you know with every fiber of your being, hey, I prefer men. That's just the way it is. There's something inside of you that says, I'm not going to play with women's feelings anymore. I'm not going to exploit women anymore. The best thing I can do for the mother of my children is to set her free to be loved the way she deserves to be loved. You see what I'm saying? That's, to me, that's a respect and a value.
Oh, that's so true.
That when you come out of denial, if you have a respect and value, it's going to show up. But if you don't have a respect or value, then whether you're in denial, out of denial, up or down, that character flaw is going to present itself not just in your relationship with your wife or your husband, but in your other relationships and in your other dealings as well.
I think one of the problems also, that maybe you can understand this, you know, because I know that you've worked with women in this situation, you know, as you know, Suzette, we usually say it at the end, but let me, to remind people who may be new and listening, Suzette is a life coach, and she's a dynamite life coach to help women get their lives on track. Coaching is different than therapy because of the fact you're not going backwards, you're moving now, you're in the now, the present today, and seeing how you're getting to tomorrow. But I'm working with a lot of, right? Would you, that's a good description, you think?
Oh, that's great. You said it really well. Go ahead on, Bonnie.
I've learned it from you, Suzette. What are you making? Yeah. Yeah, you taught me this. So I'm glad I'm able to repeat it so well. But I think one of the problems that I have, for instance, I've talked to several men recently and their wives, and one of the things that just kicks me in the stomach is when a woman tells me that her husband has said, well, make sure we're not going to tell people the reason why we're splitting up. I'm just telling them, you know, telling people the reason we're splitting up is because we have these irreconcilable differences, or we're growing in different directions, or we're not looking for the same things anymore. And so right away, the people are pointing the finger at the woman. Why is she willing to break up such a good marriage, because people always think it's a good marriage, and give up on it? You know, her poor husband, you know, is the father of her children. She's not even fighting to keep the marriage because they can't tell the truth. And this really puts the women in a bad spot. And I was telling one woman who's in that situation today that if you're not ready to say the truth, because not everybody can say it, but you can always say that he was being unfaithful to me. You don't have to say who it was with. Mm-hmm. And that usually shuts people up. You know, if you say, well, you know, on a number of occasions he was unfaithful to me and that's all I can discuss. You don't have to say he's gay. You know, you can just say he was unfaithful to me, because I think women can really be more sympathetic with that. Do you think that's a good idea?
Yeah, I do. I do want to say that one of the things that I've experienced, and I don't know if it's cultural or whatever, but I think that most people that are not gay don't really understand all of what that means. And so, because I remember being asked, you know, you say to somebody, well, my husband's gay. And they say, and they just kind of sit there looking like the deer in the headlights. And then they say, well, all I got to say is your marriage is worth fighting for. You know, it's almost like they go into their, whatever their cliche belief about marriage is, and you just told them, my husband's uh-huh. gay. And it seems to go right over their heads. They don't understand fully what that means. And as a result of it, they'll ask, say, well, did you do all you could to try to save your marriage? Well, did you go to counseling? Well, did you pray about it? You know, they go into all whatever their prescribed ways of approaching marriage. And it's nothing wrong with what they're saying, but you just told them something that really completely not a marriage. How uh-huh. can you have, as a heterosexual woman or a heterosexual man, how can you have a marriage with somebody that's gay, but yet they approach you as if it's a normal marriage and it's a normal situation? And so
the family will encourage you, right? Don't you think the family will encourage you? Because they don't want to have a gay son.
I told my mom and my dad, and they just kind of just sat there looking stupefied for a minute.
Mm-hmm.
And then the way they responded later on, it was as if they didn't get it, or they thought I wasn't. I don't know what it was. I think they just kind of went into a stupor.
Uh-huh.
Because the way they responded, well, all I'm saying is, y'all work it out. You know, it's like, wait, didn't you just hear what I told you?
Uh-huh.
You know, and I think sometimes that's what people face. You know, I think they face in with their families, with their friends, because, I mean, really, Bonnie, if it wasn't for people like you and other experts who have really delved into this thing and really studied it and really have, you know, done the work to find out about it, I wouldn't even know what I know about it. I just thought when I married my husband that gay was just going through the motions of sex. And I had always heard that men approach sex differently from women. And so I didn't realize there were any emotional components or any orientation components. I just thought, well, it's just sex. So now that you're having sex with me, that solves the sex issue.
And I think that for Christian women, it's really difficult, because I have a number of Christian women who come my way, and I feel so bad. They'll say, how could I not know it? How could I be so stupid? Okay, so number one, how would you know it? You know, we grow up in a society that tells us that gay means that you're attracted to the same sex. So that means if a man is gay, he wants a man. If a woman's gay, she wants a woman. So why would we even think that a gay man wants to have us? I mean, that wouldn't even follow any kind of logic.
Yeah, we think we in church take on this thing that it can be cured, that it's not an orientation, that it's a choice, or it's like any other sin, that you can pray the gay away, or if this person really wants to give their heart to God or really wants to do that, then in their surrendering to him, he's going to help them to become straight. So there's this sense of there being a cure or being, you know, so a lot of us that grew up in certain religions, I know all of them are not the same, but in certain religions where there's a certain degree of ignorance, just like there was ignorance about AIDS, you know, and how you can get it and all, there's a certain ignorance around the things that church people don't want to really talk about. So, you know, just like suicide, there's certain things that the church world did not really delve into the mental health or the orientation aspects. They either saw it as the devil or God. And if it didn't line up with what the Bible says you should be like, it was the devil, and so you fought the devil. I mean, so that's why I think for some it's a very difficult situation, because you're kind of brought up in a situation where there's a certain amount of denial. And I say to the listening audience, don't get me wrong. I am very, very Christian, and I really believe God can do anything. He's the creator of all things. He's able to make the impossible possible. I believe that, but I don't believe that one should disregard what's staring you right in the face. If that person is telling you that's who they are, or they're treating you with disregard and disrespect, I think it's wrong to hold on to this hope that, quote unquote, God is going to change them. There is a free will involved here. If we all, those of us that believe, you know, in Christian teaching, there is a free will that came with the package of humanity. At creation is what we believe. And with a free will, that means people have the opportunity of choosing or accepting or being or whatever they want to be, and making choices likewise. So if your husband, whether he's gay or not, is choosing to treat you with disregard and disrespect, then you have to make a decision of whether you're going to thrive in that situation, or whether you need to get the hell out. I mean, that is really what it comes down to, because they'll make themselves feel even worse if they keep pounding their heads against the wall saying, how could this have happened to me? How did I let this happen? Well, the truth about it is sometimes the way you've been taught makes you more tolerant of things. And that's not something that you should damn yourself for. You just accept the fact that's the way it was. But now you've been enlightened. Now you've been awakened. Now in this enlightened and awakened state, what are you going to do now?
Exactly. You know, one of the things I also learned about this past 2 weeks, which is something I wasn't really familiar with, but maybe you are. I was speaking to a woman, not in this context of, you know, straight gay marriages, but in another context of other problems. And she told me that she was addicted to chaos. And I thought that was just so interesting, because my ex-husband is very addicted to chaos. Like, if one day was going smoothly, he wasn't happy and he would have to create something. And have you heard of that, addicted to chaos?
Yes. As a matter of fact, it's interesting that you would say that, because one of the things that I had to realize was that I had grown up in such a chaotic, dramatic drama-filled upbringing.
Uh-huh.
You know, the disparity between biblical teaching, religion, versus the reality of what you're living in every day, there was a disparity that was really maddening, household. And so I found that as I grew up and became involved in relationships, one of the things I had to face about myself was I was addicted to drama. If things were calm, I thought something was wrong.
Well, I was pretty much in the same boat.
I didn't realize if it was love, it had to be chaotic. I mean, love meant, you know, I love you so much I can't eat, I can't sleep, I can't think, I can't function. If that ain't chaos, what is? You know, so you kind of have this ideal that love is supposed to make you deaf, dumb, and blind. And you just lose all sense of sensibility.
Yeah, I think that's possible. I think that some of these signs are a little bit different, but I'm going to read them to you and tell me what you feel about them, all right? Because it says, take this test and find out if you're creating chaos in your everyday life. So answer these true or false, and we'll discuss them. Do you usually yell and scream to make your point?
I think there were times when I did do that.
I think your son would agree with you on that one. From the mouth of him. that he did happen to mention that in one of our conversations. But that was long ago. I don't know if that keeps up. Okay, how about do you ramp up things to win every argument? You don't supposed to be thinking this long about it. Is that,
I'm thinking about it.
Yes or no? Well, while you're thinking about it, let me go to this third one. If you get sick, do you feel everyone should know about it?
So you're what now?
If you get sick, do you feel that everyone should know about it?
No.
I don't either. I hate telling people when I'm sick, but I watch, for instance, I have, you know, people on Facebook, you know, who friended me, and I friended them back, even though we're not really friends, but they know who I am. Not from our group. I'm talking about other people, my kids' friends and stuff. And, you know, like, I know a few of them will say, oh, it's 8 o'clock in the morning, my back aches. Oh, it's 9:30, I took a Motrin, and now it's feeling better. Now it's at 11 o'clock, and I'm having that do you ever see that from people?
Yes, I think that is too much information.
Right. I mean, they're living on Facebook telling everybody that they're sick.
Yeah.
How about when you argue, do you ever break things or knock them over?
No, not anymore.
Okay. How about does being calm and bored sound like the worst thing to you?
Being calm and bored?
Or bored.
Calm is wonderful. I like calm. And bored, I think bored, if you're used to chaos, you think that peace is boring. But when you're not used to chaos, you feel like peace is wonderful.
That's a good way to look at it. How about do you ever yell at strangers if you feel they are in your way?
No. 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 Mm-mm.
Do you hate it when you are not the center of attention?
No. No. Mm-mm.
Okay, how about, is there usually...
I love attention, but I give it too. So, yeah.
Absolutely, that's different. How about, is there usually a crisis to solve in your life?
Not anymore.
Good. Do you break up or threaten a breakup with a mate often?
No.
And the last one is, are you usually the one who starts fights?
No.
Okay, so you did pretty well.
Bonnie, I've grown.
Absolutely, because here it says that if you answered true to 5 or more of these questions, you are addicted to chaos. And that's definitely my ex-husband. Definitely.
Yeah,
I never saw anything
marriage,
match him so perfectly.
Yeah.
Yes, the Elvis Supreme Court, you know.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, I mean, I was a drama queen.
But you know what? I think when you feel that sense of frustration and you feel that people aren't listening to you and that you have to defend yourself all the time, I think that's the normal way to react. But my ex is into every one of these things. You know, if you get sick, he has to tell everybody. You know, when he argues, he does break things or knock them over. He can't stand things that are calm or to be bored. He likes to yell at strangers. You know, if they're in his way, he'll curse them out. And he has to be the center of attention at all times.
Yeah.
And he always has a crisis to solve in his life. But they're the crises that he creates.
That's it. See, with my ex, he was the one that was calm. But I was the one that was histrionic because he was kicking me under the table. It was almost like he's sitting there calm, and he's kicking me under the table, and I'm going, ouch, 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 ouch. So I'm the one that looks like I'm the one that's out of control when the whole issue is he was perpetuating the chaos that I was feeling.
I think also that maybe, do you think it's possible that some of these guys may be addicted to this chaos because they're trying to avoid facing who they really are, to throw people off track?
That's it. Because one of the things that I realized was if he caused enough chaos and enough fires that I had to feel like I had to put out, whether it was chaos because of overspending, juggling bills, or whether it was chaos because of something happening in the family, something happening with his health, there was always chaos, chaos with the employees. There was always chaos. And I realized later, I don't know if I read a book that pointed it out or talked to you, but something happened where I realized, oh, you're doing all this, so I'll be too tired at bedtime to want to have sex.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, so you're keeping me off balance. You're keeping me off balance. You keep me involved in other things, so I'll be too tired or distracted to really see what's going on right underneath my nose. I'll be too tired and too distracted to see see the energy between you and the man across the restaurant. You know, I'll be too distracted, too tired to notice that we've slept together for the last 2 months and you haven't touched me not once. I think that was part of the game plan.
Mm-hmm.
To keep me so busy, to keep my life so filled with distractions and drama and chaos so that I would not be on his scent, so I would not be cognizant of what was happening
exactly.
Right around.
And I think this is very common from what I'm hearing from women, that there's always something going on, that there's something unmanageable, that there's tempers flaring. But I think this is part of the ruse to keep people away from discovering the truth.
I agree. Because I realize for a person that does not want to have sex with you, they're putting up as many barriers as they can.
And maybe you could talk a little bit about that because, you know, you had to recover from, you know, a very poor relationship. And you were probably a little jaded, right? As far as, you know, going to a new relationship, being unsure how it would ever work out again, giving love a chance and more trust. Wasn't that difficult on your part?
Oh, it was difficult. It was very, very difficult coming out of that relationship. And it wasn't until about maybe I'd say 5 years later that I think I got to a point where I had recovered myself enough to, you know, try to have relationships again. And I would learn something out of each one. But it came to a point, I think, with the relationship that I had before I married Robert, that there were some issues in me. There was some some anger issues in me. And I did not realize till I was in a relationship that I had some anger that had been stored up in there, or it was chronic because I lived with it so long. I don't know what, but I really, really became aware that there was this underlying anger. Of course, I'm not an angry person. I'm a really happy person. But when it came to relationships with men, I was very suspicious. I was very accusatory. I had abandonment issues. You know, it's going to be fight or flight. You know, sometimes I would fight and then run. You know, I'm going to run from me before you run from me. I was I had a lot of those issues. And so I went to relationship coaching. I went and got some coaching to deal with all of that. And in the midst of dealing with all of that, I reclaimed more confidence. I found out a lot of the issues that I had was because I didn't feel confident in my relationship. I was playing the game, white knuckling my way through the game. I was waiting for the other shoe to drop. I was waiting for a disappointment. But it wasn't so much whether he was gay or not. I was just waiting to be abandoned. I was waiting, you know, for him to show himself to be unavailable emotionally. So I was always white knuckling my way through. But once I got relationship coaching, I gained confidence. And when I gained confidence, I was able to date with more of an open mind and an open heart and more of a willing spirit, because now I knew what to look for. I knew myself better. I knew me better, and I felt more confident in it.
And I think that's the key, what you're saying, though. You have to know yourself first before you can think about giving yourself to someone else.
And you have to know yourself. You have to know yourself from a whole standpoint, not know yourself from a I just got out of a gay relationship standpoint, because that's not who you really are. The part of you that's wounded, the part of you that's been starved, neglected, rejected, abused, that's not who you really are. That's just the baggage that you're carrying. And so until you can either lay aside the bag or unpack the bag to a certain degree, that instead of having 10 bags, maybe you only have 2 bags now. You can't really show up in a relationship if you have a whole lot of emotional baggage. So you've got to kind of deal with that first, and then that's how you find out who you really are, because who you really are is the person with the bags unpacked. And a lot of times you think, because I would have told you, I'm just the kind of person, I'm just going to tell you what I think, you know, hand on hip, thing in the air. No, I'm not angry. It's just I don't take no junk from nobody. Well, underneath that was insecurity. And I had to use my anger as a defense from being vulnerable and being taken advantage of. But that's not who you really are. When whatever you do is a result of insecurity or a defense mechanism, that's not who you are. That's just the shield and the sword you carry. But that's not who you are. And I think that was what was so vital to me when I went and saw a relationship coach. It helped me to lay down my sword, my spear, and pack my bags and really reclaim the purity of my soul, my intention, and who I really am at my core. And when I became comfortable with that much of me, then I was able to open my heart and become a willing participant in a relationship. I wasn't always waiting for the other shoe to drop. You know,
I guess it's kind of like if you're traveling and you have a blouse and you fold it up, or you have it all ironed out, and then you have to pack it tight, so you're rolling it, you're doing this, and when you get there, it's the same dress, but it's all crumpled and creased, and now you have to, you know, get all of that out of there. And the same thing in a relationship. You're carrying away from it all of the garbage that went with it. You know, you're having to carry that with you, and you need to get rid of it before you can be in a healthy state of mind to meet someone else. I always tell women, you have to go through gay husband recovery. And it's not going to happen in a week or in a month or in 3 months. It's going to take a good year of really working on it. I'm working hard, either with a coach or with a therapist. But you can't do this yourself.
I think it took me about 5 just to, like I said, get the residue of it out of my skin, out of my way of thinking, out of my way of seeing myself. Then I get in a relationship. Lasted 9 months, but by the end of it, I realized there was still some stuff I was carrying that I didn't want to bring into the next relationship because I wanted healthy. And I realized if I want healthy, then I have to be healthy as much as lies within me. You know, and of course, being married to my now sweet Robert is helping take me the rest of the way. But I had to have at least done my own work to a certain extent to even extend my hand to allow him to take me the rest of the way. To even be able to trust him to hold my hand. To even be able to trust enough to stay in the relationship long enough that I'm being healed even more so as I stay in it. So it really is an unfolding healing. It's an unfolding healing as I say, you know, this marriage is just another level of healing that's taking place in my life. And you know when we started talking, Bonnie, it had to be about how many years ago when you and I started talking?
Maybe 6 or 7.
And you know, I was trying to make sure I wasn't crazy then.
Right, because that's how we all feel, that, you know, we're imagining this, that people are telling us what's wrong with us. These are good men. Mm-hmm. How can you say these terrible things about them? Because they fool everybody. They fool the world. They fooled us. And some women are so hard on themselves. And I say to them, don't be hard on yourself. How would you know?
That's right.
They're
how would you know?
And they're really good pretenders. You know, don't forget, they live that lie every day. So it's not hard for them to keep living it. So women can't be hard on themselves. Women have to realize that, you know, if you were blindsided, welcome to our world. We all were, right?
Yeah, even if somebody told you, if you were raised in an environment where there was no experience of it or there was a certain degree of ignorance about it, because people told me that about my ex, but he put such a spin on it till his spin was, yes, that was something that I experimented with when I was younger, but now that I've given my heart to God, you know, I'm delivered of it. So in my vernacular and in my culture and in my religious upbringing, that made sense to me. So, you know, we can't be upset with ourselves for what we don't know. Sometimes people tell you, but until it becomes revelatory to you, until it makes sense to you, you really don't know. Even if somebody tells you, you don't really know. You don't know.
And why would you believe it?
Exactly.
Why would you even believe it? I mean, if anything, we would think, well, maybe he's having sex with another woman.
Yeah.
Right?
You know, and then the thing about it, too, Bonnie, in both our cases, and I'm sure in the case of many of the people listening, sex was not at the top of our list of what we needed in a relationship in the first place. For some of us, we needed to be understood. For some of us, we needed to be affirmed. You know, maybe we have been in situations where all anybody ever wanted was our body, and they never had a respect for our mind or our opinion. So if that person, you know, if that person plugs into what was most meaningful to you, of course it's going to cause you to have an allegiance. You know.
And it's just very hard to second-guess yourself, and especially when they're denying it.
Exactly.
You know, it's easier when they say, yes, this is my problem. But when they're saying you're out of your mind, that's not my problem. Why are you saying that? You know, and so many times these men lie. Yeah. Because they're afraid to tell the truth. And then they tell me, well, it's not that I'm afraid to tell the truth. I'm just worried about how hurt my wife is going to be. Well, okay, don't you think she's hurting now that you're sexually rejecting her in bed? Don't you think it hurts her now that there's no emotional or physical connection to you? Don't you think she hurts now thinking that every day, what am I doing wrong that he doesn't want me? That's what hurts,
and
not finding out why.
That's the key, because I think if you were to ask women whose husbands want to have sex with them, whether the wife is sick, whether she's got a broken leg or not, whether she's dealt with work all day, the children cleaning the house while he's laid on the sofa all day, it's the same thing. There's this thing in all of us that wants to be desired, as valuable.
Mm-hmm.
And part of the way that we feel that way is by a man's attraction to us and his sexual desire for us. But that's not the only way. For a woman whose husband, you know, almost climbs on top of her like a dog in heat every night, she may not want as much sex as a person who's married to a homosexual. But what we all want is to feel validated in our femininity, validated in our womanhood. We want to feel respected and honored that we're more than a piece of meat, you know, that we're more than a possession. We want to be affirmed. We want to be made love to. And being made love to isn't just sexual intercourse. But being made love to is how he talks to you, how he touches you, you know, the way he looks at you when you look good. You know what I'm saying? The way
exactly. He doesn't have to jump in the shower the minute after he has sex with you.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you're thinking to yourself, there's an attraction that expresses itself sexually, but we want more than that because most of us as women, we don't even want to have sex with our men if we're mad at them. Or we don't even want to have sex about men if they treated us bad all day, you know, or they disrespected us, or they didn't have our back, or, you know, they sat on the couch all day and slept and knew we were sick and didn't bring us any soup. Then he ain't getting none. You know what I'm saying? So I think it's all in respect. If you're married to a homosexual, then you're not being respected sexually in the way you need to be. And if you're married to a heterosexual, that's a jerk. And you're not being respected. So we need to be affirmed and respected, and sex is one of the ways in a marriage that we are affirmed and respected. That's just the truth.
You know, one of the things
marriage is boring.
Hopefully not. But one of the things that, you know, last week we were talking about with Dr. Brian Hooper was the whole issue now of transgenderism.
Oh, yeah.
I find that very confusing. I mean, I understand it in theory, but emotionally I just don't quite understand it. But that's become, I have more and more women coming to me with that, with husbands with sexual addictions. And even with sexual addictions, I feel that I don't want to try to uncover the situations that made my ex, you know, or made that my husband a sexual addict and have to spend years going through therapy so that he won't be one again. You know, it's like life doesn't have to be this hard. It's too complicated, too much chaos when you allow all this stuff in. And that's where I was talking about addicted to chaos. You know, some women are just drawn to chaos. And they get frustrated, you know, because nothing changes.
Yeah, I think sometimes it's the fact that we nurture. It's almost like our nurturing abilities should be toward our children. And I think sometimes We start nurturing our men. They tell us, oh, I have a problem. And we feel like, oh, now's the time for me to really nurture. Oh, he really needs me. You know, I need to be patient with him. I need to do this with him. And the thing about it, I think there is a line where you have to take a step back and say, wait a minute, you've grown. My nurturing should not be exploited by a grown man.
Uh-huh.
My nurturing is for me to take care of my children. They need nurturing, but I don't think we need to mother. That's what I want to say. We don't need to mother our men.
Uh-huh.
And I think sometimes as women, because he seems so sorry, or he's really struggling, or whatever.
I know. What is it with us that we feel that we have to fix broken men? I think that is really one of the main issues that women feel compelled. You know, they see a nice guy, they're not interested. But they find a broken man, and they're all over him. Because they feel like, I'm going to be the one who can fix him. Like, what is that about?
You and I both know that. You and I both know that's a myth.
But why do women feel this need to find somebody, instead of finding a nice guy who can really make you happy and be a good partner to you, you're looking for a bad guy who's broken because you feel this need to fix somebody. Like, that's going to validate you.
Well, you know what? I feel like if that's something that's happening, then there's some unresolved in the woman that she needs to deal with.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think that, and it's funny because that happens with so many of us. So many of us, isn't that what you hear? You know, when people ask, you know, well, why did you date this one, or why did you stay, or why did you do this? We always think, well, because we thought we were going to be the answer. We thought we were going to be the solution. We thought, well, that's the way it was with other women, but he has never dated a woman like me. I'm not like them. So I got to prove to him that I'm not like the mother who left them, or the wife who cheated on them, or, you know, sometimes we got to be the solution to whatever caused his suffering or his drama. And I really find at the core of that is like what you were saying. There is a dysfunctional core to that. There's a codependency there. There's this need, like you said, a need to be needed. That's a codependent. That's a codependent trait. One of the things when I was studying to be a substance abuse counselor, one of the things that we talked about were alcoholics and the partners that enable them. It's a very codependent relationship. She's dependent on him to be broken so she can feel needed, and he's depending on her. So there's this codependent thing going on. And for many of us, we might not have had alcoholic parents, you know, whatever, but something in our upbringing or experience of socialization has caused us to be dependent with, which is codependent, means you're dependent with. So if a man is dependent on alcohol and you're with him, you're dependent with him. So you're enabling him to continue to do what he's doing because you need to be needed. So it's
Suzanne, I can't believe it. They just gave us our 90-second warning.
Did they?
They did.
Wow.
But that's something we can talk about next month, is about codependent behavior. And just let people know, if you need Suzette to be your coach, you should only be so lucky, but she is taking new clients on. Suzette, how can they get in touch with you?
They can either go to your website, Bonnie.
Mm-hmm. Under my links. Mm-hmm.
Under your link, or they can come to www.purposeful-connections.com.
Or just write to me at bonk@aol.com, and I'll send you.
Every time.
I know. Well, that's really tough, that purposeful connections with the dash in between.
Well,
but
I
you
had
write
to put
to
a
me,
dash
oh,
there because
I'll,
when I went back, somebody had taken the other name. It was like I let my domain expire, and when I went back to it, Purposeful Connections was gone, so I had to go with purposeful-connections.com.
All right, we'll work on that till the next time I talk to you. All right, everybody. We're sending love. Suzette, I love you. Thank you so much for coming back.
I love you too, sweetie.
And we'll see you. Talk to you next month.
Okay, look forward to it.
Me too. Love you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.